Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. You can listen and subscribe to the show for free on Spotify, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Blog Talk Radio, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Audible. For network or show information, visit BiteRadio.me. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is F. Francis Jones, and we'll be talking about his work, his journey, as well as his new book, Heal and Grow, Lessons Learned on My Journey as a Mental Health Professional. Far from yet another self-help book, Heal and Grow is making a real difference for those who have taken on board the strategies and advice given by this supportive and experienced licensed marriage and family therapist, with readers praising his easy-to-follow and unpreachy delivery. Each chapter focuses on the lessons F. Francis Jones learned while helping clients during his 20-plus year career, delivering actionable strategies to manage stress, become more resilient, and more emotionally healthy, including a chapter centering on men and the challenges many of them face in today's world. This author demonstrates page after page that he knows his stuff. F. Francis Jones is a licensed marriage and family therapist in the state of Georgia who, for more than 20 years, has worked with children, adolescents, and adults to assist them with overcoming a variety of personal and difficult challenges. He also serves as an adjunct instructor at a community college where he has been teaching psychology for more than 8 years. For more information, you can visit his website, which is www.ffrancisjones.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Frank to the show. Good day, Frank. Thanks for joining me.
Good day, and thank you, Robert, for having me on your show.
It's a pleasure. And anytime I can offer our listeners assistance in dealing with life's challenges, I mean, you know, life can't be better than doing that for people. So I'd like to start with, would you mind sharing with the listeners a little bit about your journey, you know, from, you know, from your youth in Chicago to, mm-hmm. you know, to the point of becoming a therapist?
Okay. Well, it's kind of a unique journey, but I'll definitely gladly share it with you and your listeners. So as you mentioned, I'm from Chicago, grew up on the South Side, and I should have had an idea I would end up being a therapist because when I was younger, I was always the person who people brought their problems to. And so they would come to me for advice about a variety of different topics. Also, when I was young, even before high school, I really got into superheroes, especially Marvel superheroes. And I think Spider-Man was my first character that I was introduced to, and I just loved the idea that he was there to help and save people, and I kind of fell in love with that type of person or wanting to be a hero, and I think that always stayed with me. And as I grew older, I remember when I left college, when I graduated high school and went on to college, I decided I wanted to major in communications, specifically radio and television. And fortunately for me, I graduated ultimately and ended up working at one of the top music stations in the city of Chicago. While I was there, I worked in marketing and promotion, production, and became an on-air disc jockey where my stage name or on-air name was Frankie J. And it was a lot of fun. It was interesting. What's funny, my initial show was actually a hip-hop show. I played rap music. This was long ago as rap was starting to become a thing. and then the rap show got so popular that I was able to transform or spin off and create a music video show that was called Kickin' It. And it aired for 2 seasons on the NBC affiliate in Chicago. So that was interesting. We taped in front of a studio audience, and just me and my co-host just did a lot of crazy things. But then at some point, my last radio job full time, I was actually given an opportunity to host my own morning show on the island of Guam. I got the offer. I thought it was so unique. Give it a shot. And so I did, and I moved to Guam and hosted a morning show, and it was quite an experience. And I was there for about a year, and I came back. And once I returned, for some reason, I needed to do something new. I went to visit some friends in L.A. They told me, you should just move here. And I did, and started pursuing working in television. It was all behind the scenes. I worked on shows like Family Feud, Divorce Court. Howie Mandel had a daytime talk show. I worked on his program as well, and a couple of pilots. And but even after a while, I realized I need to do something else. As a matter of fact, Divorce Court, the last television show I worked on, was the catalyst to making me go back to college. Because I'm not. Are you familiar with Divorce Court, the program?
I don't even know if it's still on. I mean, I don't really watch it, but I know. You know, I've seen a couple episodes.
Okay. Well, I was an associate producer, and one of my roles or jobs was to help find people to put on the show. And so that meant talking to a lot of individuals, hearing their stories, what's going on with their relationship, and seeing if they would be a fit for the program. And it was a challenging work because we needed a certain number of guests before tape day came around. And working there, it didn't really feel like a fit for me, but it was a job, so I continued to work there. And one day, I was talking to a woman, and I remember she thanked me. Even though I was unable to use her for our program, she said, thank you for listening to me. I felt like I've been doing this all alone. And somehow our conversation made her feel supported. And it is at that very point that I decided that is my motivation for coming into this job that I'm not very fond of doing. But my goal now is to come in and possibly be of service or be a blessing to someone just by listening to them. And that's what got me through the day. Unfortunately, during that time, 9/11 occurred, and once that unfortunate attack took place, we were no longer able to fly people in to do the show because no one wanted to fly. Even once planes were no longer grounded, and then ultimately the show ended up having to lay people off because we weren't taping, and I was an associate producer, and all the associate producers got let go. And once that happened, I realized, you know what, this might be the opportunity to now to go back to school and get a master's degree in psychology. And so that's exactly what I did. And that's how I got on that path.
That is, like you said, it's quite unusual, but it's quite diverse. But what it seems, you know, first of all, I want to, you know, make mention of, you know, you said that and when you were young, you would have people come to you with their problems, and that was kind of might have been a clue. And I think I read in your book that there were friends who wondered what took you so long to get to that point.
I remember telling one of my closest friends, his name is Jason, I remember telling Jason and a couple other friends, hey, I've decided I'm going to go to grad school and become a counselor and a therapist. They literally said, do you think you're surprising anybody? Like, they were literally like, of course you are. That makes total sense. everyone believed it. They were like, what took so long? That was literally the attitude they had. Well, what took so long? Like, really? Of course.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's, I find it interesting because I've, you know, talked to, I mean, over the, I've been doing this for now, I'm starting my 14th year next month. And
wow, congratulations.
Thank you. But it's very often people at a young age will display an interest in something that ends up being kind of a calling, you know, something that they their heart's desire kind of leads them to do. And quite often it's a very circuitous route that people take. But it seems that, you know, each step of the way teaches you skills or provides insights that are kind of like markers, you know, that lead you that way. It just seems to be, I don't say a pattern, but it seems to be, you know, a process that people will follow often.
It's really, it's almost like, to me, like people are being prepared for something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. And it often, I mean, I have found that, you know, life has to happen. So, you know, certain things in life has to happen, you know, before you get to that point, you know. So, like there's, you know, no, you know, cutting corners. You kind of have to
Whether we want it to happen or not, yes.
Exactly. So now, what was your, you know, inspiration or what was the spark that led you to write Heal and Grow?
You know, it's interesting. I've always thought it would be a really great or a cool idea to just write a book one day. I'm sure I'm not the only one who thought it would be great or who has desired to write a book. I can't be the only one. But for me, I could never think about what would I write about? Would it be nonfiction? Would it be fiction? Because I tend to have a pretty creative or vivid imagination. So I thought about even maybe I need to write a good fiction book. And nothing ever inspired or motivated me enough to do anything. And then about, I want to say before the pandemic hit, probably about 6 months before the pandemic hit, one day I was in the kitchen and as if a voice, a spirit, something from beyond, something said, you need to write a book about what you've learned on your journey being a therapist. It was that clear and concise.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard the idea and I was thinking, I think I can write that. Like, it's because it's me. It's my story. Of course I can write about me. And from that moment on, once I guess you could say accepted the assignment, from that point on, things just flow to me regarding what to put in the book. Like it started where, let me just start keeping note cards handy and I'll just put these ideas on my note cards. But the ideas kept coming to me at unique times when I'm in unique places where I didn't even have note cards. And I realized, oh, wait a minute, I have a cell phone. There's actually a section on the cell phone for notes. And I started just leaving notes, ideas, concepts, things I wanted to get across in my phone. And that lasted for, I was leaving notes in my phone for probably 8-9 months. And then one day I said, okay, now you need to write a book. So then I don't even know how many pages it was. Then I had to email myself the notes, print out all the notes I made and cut them up into little strips and try to organize them into thoughts and ideas that made sense. And then the book was on the way. It was on the way. And what, like I said, once the idea came, it was like I was almost like, I wouldn't say driven. It felt more like I was guided, because there were times where I would feel stuck. I don't know, what do I say here, or how do I say it? And then out of nowhere, what to say and how to communicate that idea would simply just occur very naturally and smoothly. And then I'd be like, oh, there it is. Thank you, whoever provided me with that insight.
I know what you're talking about. I've kind of self-published a few books, but my first one was, I was told in the 1990s, you know, that I would write a book and it would be published in 2012. And, you know, again, this is the 90s, so I'm thinking, about it, like 20 years in the future. And and my background was in the corporate world. I was a corporate trainer in banking and in restaurant industries. And so for years, I kept trying to write something, but it kept coming out like a training manual. You know, it's like, oh, you know, this isn't it. And then now I'm a nature photographer, so every day my stick is I go on a walk, you know, a little nature walk, take my camera, and just on one day, out of the blue, just like pretty much happened to you, you know, the plot for the book just popped into my head. I mean, with the ending, started with the ending, you know. And, and then for me, you know, each day I would, I mean, and I didn't do it in, you know, in a regular, typical way of, you know, character development and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Mine was, I would walk and then, you know, the ideas, like the ideas pop into your head. And when you jotted them down, they would just pop into my head. And I would get back to the house and just write them down, you know, and it went down for almost the same length of time, a typical gestation period, you know, 8 or 9 months, you know. And, so, you know, and it's like you say, you know, once you kind of accept, you know, that it's happening, you know, and then you decide that I'm going to commit to this, you know, then, it, you know, the pieces, you know, start to come together, you know. So I just wanted, for those out there listening, if you know you have a book that you want to do, just recognize that, you know, when once you get that particular idea, go with it and you know, commit to it. And so now with yours, the idea of lessons learned, now in your book, you obviously will go through and talk about some of the lessons learned, but also there's in the introduction I indicated that you have practical kinds of application that people can use for that. So can you tell us a little bit about that part of the book, you know, and why you put that in there?
Well, as far as applications, interventions that people can use to help them deal with today's challenges or struggles, I try to communicate a message that therapy can be very beneficial. Now, all therapists are not created equal. There's some very talented therapists, and there's some other therapists who may question why they're even in the field. But that's pretty much with any industry. But for me, how can I phrase this? It's not just therapy that we can use to, so therapy is just one way. And I never want anybody to think they have to go to therapy to work through their problems or their challenges or their issues. But it is if you get with the right therapist, it can be helpful. But then there's books, there's DVDs, there's audio, there's podcasts, there are close friends and family and people in clergy. There are many different ways for us to get therapy besides going to see a therapist. Sometimes just journaling can be therapeutic. I have a friend, a really close friend of mine, who unfortunately recently lost her husband. And although she is not journaling as she deals with her grief, she is in some way journaling through the use of Facebook. So she is keeping people up to date and informed with her struggles, maybe every 2 or 3 days. And I had a conversation with her, and she said that doing that has actually been more productive and helpful than going to the therapist, she was saying. And I think if we're just open to a variety of different possible ways to heal, to grow, I think we can accomplish that goal. I mean, I have a saying that goes, there is always more than one way in life to accomplish anything. And that includes overcoming challenges.
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's good to hear you say that, because, you know, for some people, they may have, an aversion to, to going to a therapist.
Yes,
definitely. You know, and many times, there may be misconceptions they may have about the process, or, maybe have heard experiences that weren't real positive. So, there is that. But it's good to recognize that there are many different avenues one can utilize to, get assistance in helping with issues.
Yes.
Now, you specialize in marriage and family therapy. I was wondering if you can tell us maybe why you chose that. And I read in your book that your childhood had some challenges with it, and I was wondering if maybe that contributed to your decision.
Well, in all fairness, the reason why I'm a marriage and family therapist is because when I decided to go to grad school, I was in the Los Angeles area, and going to grad school, the primary options were I could specialize in being a licensed social worker, I could be a licensed professional counselor, or a licensed marriage and family therapist. The vast number of schools and programs specialized in marriage and family therapy. There were quite a few social work avenues I could have taken, but clinical social workers can definitely do therapy, but they do a lot of other things that I really wasn't interested in doing.
Yeah.
And so by default, it became, well, I guess I'm going to pursue marriage and family therapist. But I am so glad I did, because I've really enjoyed working with couples, working with families, and still I do a lot of individual therapy. The vast majority of my clients are individual. Probably 70% of my clients are individual. And so that's much why I ended up going that path.
Okay. Well, good. So I'm going to go ahead and to take a quick break. We're a few minutes early, but I want to take a quick 90-second break. And then when we come back, I want to kind of delve into some of the chapters that you have in your book, and maybe give the listeners an idea of what they could expect from reading.
Sounds good.
Everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder, we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to the more than 1,700 shows we have aired during the past 13 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide. Books, photography products and services, calendars and greeting cards. There is also a link to our account at Fine Art America where you can purchase items such as mugs, prints, pillows, and more. Our show is available as a free podcast on multiple platforms such as iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, and Audible, with icons to each platform on our homepage. We are also available on social media platforms such as Facebook, X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Threads. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone. Thank you for staying with us again today. My special guest is F. Francis Jones, and we are talking about his book and his journey. The book is Heal and Grow, Lessons Learned on My Journey as a Mental Health Professional. And again, you can find out more about Frank and his book and his services by visiting his website, which is www.ffrancisjones.com. Okay, with that, we're back, Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you have, you know, your book is in a very easy format. Lessons learned about people, anxiety, lessons learned about couples. So, I mean, it's all lessons learned. So it's very easy for if someone is interested in a particular topic for assistance, it would be easy for them to locate it in the book. But I want to start with, first of all, one of them, the first chapter you talk about lessons learned about people in therapy. And you talked a little bit about, you know, the idea of, you know, people's expectations and the different ways that they can receive therapeutic assistance. We'll kind of skip over that one. The second one is lessons learned about anxiety and depression. It seems that is ever since the pandemic, the incidence of anxiety and depression seem to have exploded. What's your view? Do you feel that has been the case, or you know, what do you feel the current state of anxiousness with people today?
Well, I do think the pandemic contributed to a lot of people's anxieties, both adults, teenagers, and children. But in a way, it kind of gave a boost or like put our anxiety in the microwave and just made it worse. It was already there. People were already struggling with anxiety and depression. More and more young people were having thoughts of suicide or even attempting it. Like these problems were there. But I think what has happened is, and these are just my opinions, and you know, I'm sure other people have other valid points as well, but I think a big issue that has created so much more anxiety and depression, actually it's several issues. One, I think we live in a world where fear is promoted. Whether it was the pandemic, am I going to be safe? Is this person safe? Am I going to catch it? What's going to happen in the future? What's going to happen to my business? We live in this fear. We're always worried. That's the anxiety about what's going to happen to us and what's going to happen in the future. We allow uncertainty to affect us at such a deep emotional and mental state. So that fear creates, and then we have the media, whether it's social media or the news in general, the stories they often tell also promote fear, whether it's something. But our world isn't all fear. There are things that happen that are good It's just they're not magnified. So we have fear as one reason contributing to our anxiety and depression. Another reason, I think, another thing that plays a role basically is our ignorance. I say ignorance as in not knowing how connected we all are, not knowing how there more than likely is some divine entity that is there for us, not knowing that if we just care about one another more and better, we can help change the world.
Yeah.
And instead of continuing to be divided, and that's the other thing, like in on my website, I one of my shirts, I have like some positive sayings on a couple of products. One of the sayings that's in the book and on the T-shirt is, the ego divides, spirit unites. And that by that I mean so many of us live in our ego, that immature side of ourselves, the uninvolved, that unevolved, the part of ourselves that always thinks it's right. When we live in our ego, we separate ourselves from one another. We get in little groups. My group is right. Your group is wrong. My beliefs are right. Your beliefs are wrong. My political party is right. Your political party is wrong. And when we divide ourselves, we weaken ourselves. Meanwhile, when we live in spirit, instead of focusing on ourselves and our ego, we live in spirit, we're focusing on others. We're focusing on what makes this other person happy, what makes them happy. Let me think about them. Let me serve them. Ego is about serving self. Living in spirit, I think we serve others. But our world right now seems, a lot of people seem to be focusing on themselves and getting what they want. And so those are some of the factors that I think contribute to the high rates of anxiety, the high rates of depression right now.
Yeah, I agree. And, oh, by the way, speaking of your merchandise, I love the mug, Strengths and Kindness. It's a beautiful, simple design, but it's great.
And even with that, statement, Strength and Kindness, maybe you can answer this question. I'm not sure how often kindness is promoted in today's world.
Yeah. It's not enough.
Exactly. You know. It's not enough. I think as adults, maybe we need to do a better job of role modeling that for the young people.
I agree. And, you know, when you were talking about fear, you know, when you listed fear first, you know, in your last chapter, which is Hope for the Future, one of your hopes was that going forward, people would be spending much more time living in love and not in fear. And, you know, it seems that, you know, that is a way for people to initiate change in their life by living that daily, you know, and it's kind of like start with yourself with that.
Yes. That's, and to me, and I've heard other people, I'm sure there are other people who I believe I've heard say this, but some people think the opposite of love is hate. Sometimes I think the opposite of love is fear.
It's hard to love.
Like even in a relationship, it's hard to love someone fully if you're living in fear.
Yes. And to me, it seems like the basis of hate is fear. You know, I mean, hate stems from fear.
I totally agree with that. That's when you can make people fearful. When you can make people fearful or angry, you kind of can, they can be controlled, actually.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And we're seeing that play out in our national scale right now. I mean,
unfortunately,
you know,
I agree.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I totally agree with you.
Yeah, and, you know, whatever one's political leanings are, you know, the idea, the reaction to fear, you know, to what, you know, what comes of promoting fear, you know, versus what comes from promoting love or joy or, you know, just peacefulness, you know.
Yes.
I guess, you know, it's a personal choice. What, how do you want your life to be reflected? And, you know, then choose accordingly, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, that would be a good goal to have.
Exactly. Okay, so much for anxiety and depression. we're kind of moving away from that one. But it, you know, it is something that, you know, I think people, they experience fear. If they have a fearful experience of something happening in their life, to maybe just take a pause, you know, and try and shift that emotion, you know, to, you know,
right.
one of an acceptance, and that would be a great way to start. Now,
yes.
Also,
I want to jump in real quick and say, when we live, when we allow ourselves to live in fear, I think that prevents us from living more fulfilling lives.
Yeah, it does.
No, I was going to say, because it prevents us from, like, maybe taking risks, taking chances, whether it's approaching that person we think is cute on the other side of the room, or applying for their job that we think, well, they're not going to hire me. It's just, it prevents us from really experiencing more when we live in a state of fear. I just want to add that piece.
No, I agree. And I have a little funny story that kind of, I mean,
okay.
It's a little bit connected. I mentioned, you know, taking photography. One night I was out taking a picture of a sunset. And this young man, probably in his late teens, early 20s, but most likely in his late teens, comes running by me and just kind of rushes off to this construction area across the street from where I'm taking pictures. And after a few minutes, I decided to kind of take a look to see where he went. Well, he had gone on top, you know, climbed up on a construction machine. You know, I'm not sure what it's called.
A scaffolding or something?
Well, kind of like a bulldozer kind of, you know.
Heavy machinery. Okay, got it. Okay.
Heavy machinery. And I saw him taking pictures. You know, I thought, oh, how about that? So anyway, I decided to walk over to him and say, hey, how does it look from up there? He said, oh, it's, you know, so I decide, why not? I'm going to climb up to, well, you know, I'm 68. I don't usually climb machinery, you know, let alone, I'm sure the construction company wouldn't have been happy with me, you know.
No, they would not.
And one of the things that had prevented me from doing it, because, you know, it's a higher view for, you know, and so I mean, it would have been able to get a better picture, but, you know, I had that, you know, that I couldn't do that, and it was, you know, fearful in a way of, you know, first of all, you know, what would the consequences be, but anyway, I decided to do it, went up, got a great picture, we had a wonderful exchange, you know, he was getting into photography, and we had a little talk about photography, and so it, but, you know, it was one of those cases where I just let, just kind of took advantage of the situation and just did something that I would not normally have done, you know. So, you know, that was one of those cases where, you know, fear may have prevented me from doing something, but I was kind of nudged, you know, by this little interaction, you know, to do something different.
Right. That's a great story. Oh, and by the way, I too love photography. And even used to compete in high school photography competition. But that's one of my hobbies. And as a matter of fact, the cover of my book, I took the picture.
Wonderful, that's great.
So
the
people who was publishing my book, they kept sending me images, and none of them were what I was looking for. And I finally said, you know what? I'm going to go out and take the picture that I want. And I was able to find it and take it.
Well, that's the way to do it. That's the way to
yep.
do it.
So, and I know, prefer nature pictures just like you. I prefer, I really enjoy taking nature shots just like you.
Oh, great. Well, we'll have to connect on Facebook and share our love of photography. So,
definitely.
Now, one of the areas that you also, as a marriage therapist, deal with is couples therapy. And when I was going through that chapter, one of the things that kind of just stood out to me was the what are some suggestions for couples? How do they move forward after there's been some infidelity in the relationship?
Yes.
And that's, I've had friends who have, dealt with that kind of situation. And I'm sure that it's, not that uncommon. So,
not at all.
In your work, does that come up, number one, does it come up often? And how do people move forward from that?
Well, first of all, as far as couples are concerned, typically when they come to my office or do it virtually, it's sometimes about communication or a lot of disagreements because of expectations or different perspectives. That's common, but then there are those where there was an affair or someone was unfaithful. And I have to be really upfront and honest with those individuals that to work through an affair, it takes one, work and commitment, and then finally, it takes time because trust has been violated, and there is no quick way or instantaneous way to rebuild trust. For most of us, trust is something that happens over time, and so I try to prepare them initially of what it's going to require to move through this. And I try to be as honest and open, but I tell them it can happen. You can not only go through this, you can grow through this, but it's not going to be easy. And sometimes we're going to see some progress, and then sometimes we're going to feel like we just lost some ground. And typically, to even start seeing progress, sometimes you even have to get through the past year, and one person, the person who's been hurt, the person who was cheated on, and the person who did the cheating, they have different things to work through. So you have to deal with that. And so as a couples therapist, I have to keep that in mind. As a matter of fact, there are times where I have to separate them because they each have a different agenda. And I go, okay, for the first 20 minutes, I'm going to switch you and I. The next 20 minutes, it's the two of us. And so I have to do that. But as far as trying to help them do that, I have to assess. Sometimes we have to start with rebuilding the friendship. And then sometimes I have to start with communication, how they interact and speak to one another. So it's about, like, if you're going to build a house, you have to start with the foundation so it can stand. When I'm trying to repair a couple who've dealt with infidelity, I have to start with the basics. How do you talk to one another? How do you interact? Do you spend quality time with one another? I have to start there. And I wish I could give a magic formula to say, well, couples just need to do A, B, and C, and it works out in the end, and that's not true. And on top of that, it's also challenging. Sometimes one person is not as committed to saving the marriage or the relationship as the other person. That becomes a problem, too.
Yeah, wow.
I'm
sure that, and it's good that you set the expectation. I would say expectation, because you mentioned expectations earlier, mm-hmm. And how that kind of plays into relationship. Now, you also have a chapter on lessons learned about non-romantic relationships.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. and then that one talking about expectations. How do expectations play into, you know, creating a challenging relationship? I mean, and what are ways of managing expectations?
Okay. Well, part of the issue or the challenge with expectations is that all of us, knowingly or unknowingly, create images in our minds of how we either think how something should look or how we want something to look. So we have mm-hmm. these ideas, whether it's my relationship with my coworkers are supposed to look like this. My supervisor is supposed to see this in me. My relationship with my family members, my siblings, my friends, and my intimate partners, we have this image. And sometimes we feel anything that's not in alignment with that picture, we get frustrated, we get disappointed, we get upset, we get angry, as we continue to try to force that image to be manifested.
Mm-hmm.
That's what gets us in trouble. In my opinion and in my experience, is us trying to make something look the way we think it's supposed to look. And even when I know we just talked about couples, but sometimes when I'm with a couple, I tell them that just because you have one way of looking at things and they have another, it doesn't make the other person wrong. They just have a different opinion. And I usually give them a metaphor, like if you guys are sitting on the couch and you both pull out your cell phones and take my picture, both of your pictures will not, you both took pictures of me. Both pictures will not look exactly alike because you're sitting at different spots on the couch. But both of those mm-hmm. pictures are telling the truth. Two people can be right, just like two people can be wrong. And that goes into, like, our images. We think the kids have to be raised this way. My relationship with my son has to look this way. And I think we would be more at peace if we could try to manage or reduce the expectations we have of others and even of ourselves. Because some of us think we're supposed to be somewhere in life that we're not, at least not yet. And then we allow that to bum us out, to make us feel depressed because of that doggone image.
As a matter of fact, a couple more of your hope for the future from the chapter, I love mm-hmm. that hope, would be mm-hmm. that we'd stop rushing to judge the actions and words of others and stop judging
goodness.
Ourselves
so
harshly.
Can we? I would really like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, our lives would be so much more peaceful if we just stopped judging, you know, just allow people and actions to be what they are.
And unfortunately, this is where social media and the internet has also mm-hmm. contributed to the challenges. Because everybody has a platform now if they want one.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people on their platform, they use it to judge and criticize.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's whether it's something quick on TikTok or a video on Facebook, like people are so, we are become such a judgmental, critical, We it's like we're looking for things to criticize almost.
Yeah, you know, and the issue of young girls' self-image, know, their judgment, judging themselves against what they see. And then many times what they see is altered images, you know, photographs.
Right. It's not real. It's not real what they're comparing themselves to.
Yeah. Yeah. And it creates such a sadness, I think, in young girls that it's, you know, it's just a shame. So now we're down to the last 10 minutes. So there's a couple more things I want to throw in there. And one of them is, you know, you have a chapter about lessons learned about men in therapy. Tell us, you know, are guys tougher to, you know, take on a therapeutic kind of journey? What was one of the lessons you learned about men in therapy?
Well, first of all, I've learned that men are far more reluctant to come to therapy, whether it's individually, definitely individually, even as a couple. They're usually being dragged by the other, by their partner or a spouse. But and part of the reason I believe, in my opinion, that men are so resistant or push back to therapy because men think that that's a sign of weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Going to therapy means that something's wrong with them. Going to therapy is not very masculine. And then there are those men who their egos prevent them from going to therapy because they think there's nothing wrong with me, or I can handle this situation. I'm fine.
Yeah.
They and so that becomes the issue too. Well, women are more, and I'm generalizing, of course, women tend to be more willing to work on themselves, to figure out, how do I get through this? Well, men, I got this. I'm good.
Yeah.
And that becomes the challenge. And even when a man is actually in therapy, sometimes, especially if it's as a couple. Now, individually, if a man comes to me for therapy, I usually praise him and I thank him for being willing to take this walk, to take this journey.
Right.
Because I know it might take some courage, it might have to swallow the ego a little bit. So I encourage them. But in a couples therapy session, sometimes if the man feels like he was dragged there, he's going to be the resistant one in the session. Or he's going to try to make it seem like he's right and he knows what he's doing and I don't think we need to be here anyway. And you can't – if somebody comes to therapy with that attitude, they're not going to gain much. It's hard to put something – in a container, and the container is already full.
Right.
So that's the challenges with males.
Yeah. Now, do you think part of the one of like the seeds of that are in the socialization process that, you know, young girls and boys, you know, go through, you know, and,
definitely.
And, okay, so for parents, what would it be, how would a parent kind of give their child, their young boys, the tools to be, you know, to be open to that kind of approach when older?
Well, I think, first of all, it should probably start with parents, or in this case, if we're talking about a boy, and let's say hopefully his father is present, if the father can role model the behaviors that we're talking about, if that father can demonstrate a willingness to be open, to be vulnerable, a willingness to look inside himself, a willingness to work on himself and know that he still has room to heal and grow. There's steps he's doing to try to continue to evolve as a human being and as a man. If a little child, if a young boy can see that in his father or in other men in his life, he now has something to say, you know what, if he, oh, my uncle goes to therapy, maybe it's okay if I go to therapy when I get older. So we, Roma, because society has made males think they have to always be tough and be strong and stoic and keep all of our feelings and emotions locked in, and we all have to be able to be capable of handling any and every situation that comes our way.
Yeah.
Not a very realistic message, though.
No, no, it's not. And you know, the idea of being, of modeling, you know, that type of behavior, you know, or, you know, demonstrating that kind of behavior as a role model for a child is wonderful, Mom. But now we are down to the very end of the show, Frank. You can go on and on.
Okay.
But just to let the audience know that, you know, you also have a chapter on self-care, which is very important.
Mm-hmm.
Challenges
yes.
and treatment, concerns for the community and the world. And again, mm-hmm. my favorite is hope for the future. So.
Yes.
The final question, what do you hope readers will take away from reading Heal and Grow?
I hope that they are awakened to the person that they can be, the healed person that they can be. And I hope people become more aware of how working on ourselves can benefit others, especially those that are close to us, those in our community, those in the world. We can do so much. We can heal and grow as individuals, and we can heal and grow as a society. But it takes a willingness and a commitment to do so. And there's many different ways to make this happen, but I hope people are gaining, understanding those themes and messages that I try to put into the book.
Great. Well, Frank, this has really been a wonderful conversation. I want to thank you for your time today.
I thank you, Rob. Thank you for having me on your program. It's really been great. It's been very easy to talk with you. And, I continue success for this show, this podcast, bringing inspiration to Earth. You're doing a great thing here as you use your talents, your gifts, and your interests to serve others as well.
Thank you very much. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been F. Francis Jones. We've been talking about his book, Heal and Grow, Lessons Learned on My Journey as a Mental Health Professional. And again, you can find out more about the book as well as services offered by visiting the website www.ffranciscjones.com. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to BikeRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To become a show follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.com/BikeRadioMe and click on the follow link. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at BikeRadioMe. Be sure to visit our website at www.BikeRadio.me. That's BikeRadio.me. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.